Here we are in the Congressional Corner with one of our favorite Congress watchers, David Hawkins, who is editor-in-chief of The Fulcrum, a news outlet focused on reversal of dysfunction in American government. He's also a former senior editor of the Congressional Quarterly and Roll Call. Welcome back, David. It's always so much fun to have you. I know that you're sitting down there watching all of this for all of us. Were you at the White House the other day when the president gave his valedictory?
I did not go. I resisted the temptation and just watched it on the TV, which allowed me to hit the, I have to admit, I hit the mute button about halfway through.
I get it. Believe me, I get it. So everybody's talking about the impeachment acquittal, the process, and what comes next for Congress. I got to tell you, we have heard from the Republican senators that he would never do this again. He would never break the rules again, break the norms again. He goes into the White House, and he makes me really, truly want to throw up. And so it's clear they were full of baloney, right?
Well, I thought it was so most prominently that the senator who said this most memorably was Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, who had voted, one of the two Republican senators who voted to have the witnesses and make it more of a full-fledged trial. And it was, to me, kind of an astonishing, curious decision on her part to give the rationale she gave, which is that he's going to turn over a new leaf, that he's learned from all this, because the odds of that happening were so small. And then there he was the day after the verdict, you know, not only in the East Room, which is sort of his house, and he gets to... he gets to throw the rhetoric around his own house, I guess, how he wants. But that was after he'd gone to the National Prayer Breakfast, which is one of the few remaining genuinely bipartisan annual events that happen in Washington, you know, and calling into question the religious faith of the woman sitting next to him on the dais.
That being Nancy Pelosi and, of course, David Hawkins, in terms of the White House versus the Congress, how would you score this game?
Oh gosh! In terms of who played it best?
Yeah, and what's happening to the prestige of both of them, Nancy Pelosi?
Oh, I think right. I mean, executive power is on the rise. Executive. I mean, what's the bottom line of impeachment? The bottom line of impeachment is that the president can justifiably feel unbridled to push executive authority and his own authority to even dizzier heights than any other president has been before. Now, we should pause for just a second here, and I think you will agree with me when I say that, to a hammer, the world is a nail, and to a president, every president wants to assert as much power as he possibly can, and executive power has been ratcheting up steadily since Watergate. It kind of got knocked back after Nixon. It's been steadily increasing ever since. George W. Bush took it to new levels. Barack Obama did as well. Trump has as well. But when not a single Republican will vote, not even Mitt Romney, who will go down in history for voting for obstruction of power, not even he voted to convict the president of obstruction of Congress, and the sort of the broad brush, unilateral, unrepentant stiff arming of the Congress that the president has now succeeded in doing, surely will only continue.
So how much of a champion is Nancy Pelosi in all of this? I mean, I cheered when she ripped up the speech and said, he ripped up the Constitution, I'm ripping up the speech. Is she a loser or a winner, or is it sort of she's on the Democratic side and it's 50-50 in this country?
Great question. I think that she is... it's undeniable that she was a reluctant pursuer of impeachment. It seems like an eternity ago, but just last Labor Day, I guess it was, she was continuing to say, this is too soon, let's not do this, it's going to be a political loser for us. And then the circumstances with Ukraine and the whistleblower became forced her hand. So she played this as assertively and as well as she could have. Now she seems to feel, as you and I are talking now, which is right after the speech got ripped up, and then she sort of took the president on again after the president questioned her faith. She says she feels liberated and unbridled. Will that mean that between now and the November election, she will be more rhetorically combustible with the president than ever before? And will that be good for the party? I think it's a little too soon to say.
You know, there are those of us who see in Trump's approach to his office and to what he's doing in this country a sort of revision of things that we saw with dictators in the 1930s and 40s, and the same game plan, war on the press, vindictiveness, go after your enemies, your political enemies, make sure they don't rise again. What do you think?
I think it is reminiscent. I was one story that got overlooked because it happened the same day as impeachment. Was kind of alarming to me as the father of a guy who wants to be an architect, was that the president is actually in the process of taking control, personal control, over the design of all new federal buildings. I think this is something, my memory of this is something Mussolini did. This is something that Hitler, in some way, he had a board of architects on his staff. Trump says he wants more classical, monumental, classical buildings. But either way, if he's going to try and put his own personal stamp on federal architecture, that's just yet another underscoring of what you were saying.
Now, Nancy Pelosi doesn't want to talk to Trump. That's clear. And Trump doesn't want to talk to Nancy Pelosi. Pelosi says she'll get together, as she did on the revision of NAFTA, with the president. But it doesn't look too good for the continuing.
It doesn't. And fortunately or unfortunately, first of all, we should say, in the 4-year cycle of a presidential administration, the fourth year is always the least productive year legislatively. That is especially true when a president is running re-election against a Congress that is at least in part controlled by the other party. That is all the more true when we're in a divided government. So it was going to be a pretty small beer year anyway in terms of policy changes. The president himself at his State of the Union, it was sort of a throwaway line that didn't get much notice. He talked about he really downgraded his own expectations for what was once going to be what we all thought was going to be the linchpin of his bipartisan legacy, which is a huge infrastructure bill. Now he's way downgraded his expectations for that, once is asking Congress to essentially finish a bill that would spend, about 10% of what he initially wanted to spend. You would think the issue of reducing prescription drug prices is something that both Republicans and Democrats have talked about. It would also be ripe for bipartisan agreement. But Trump, in his speech, talked only about his own plan, leaving it to the Democrats to sort of be disruptive. They were holding up three fingers. For those of who weren't paying attention, they were referring to H.R. 3, which is the Democrats' own prescription drug bill. So no sign of compromise there. What does that leave? It leaves the annual budget fight. I would say that just not closing down the government on a month before the election, when the new budget year starts, would probably be the biggest victory that Congress can hope for.
David Hawkins is editor-in-chief of The Fulcrum, a news outlet focused on a reversal of dysfunction in American government. Former senior editor of CQ and Roll Call, and a friend of ours here at WAMC, keeps us going all the time. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you, Alan.